the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanti Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Brother Harishankar, Senior Manager, Medicare Division of the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust. Hari completed his MBA program from the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning in the year 2002. And prior to that, he had done his BTech from the prestigious Indian Institute of Technology in Chennai. In this thought-provoking talk, he very beautifully blends experiences and insights from Bhagwan. This talk was delivered in the Satsang Hall here in Prashanti Nilayam on the 23rd of July, 2016. Stay tuned, dear listeners, interspersed, and after the talk, we have some soulful bhajans from the album Bhavanjali, Volume 4, produced by the Sri Sathya Sai Media Division under the banner of Sai Blossom. After which, at 3:30 p.m., we will have the live Telugu segment Sri Sathya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari. And for now, over to Brother Harishankar.
Placing my humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, Sai Ram to all of you who are gathered here. To introduce myself, my name is Harishankar. I work in the Sri Sathya Sai Central Trust in the what is called the Medical Care Division. So we cater to the super speciality hospitals and the general hospital and mobile hospital that is set up by Bhagwan. I've been working as a senior manager in Central Trust from the last 13 years. Prior to that, I did my master's in business administration from Swami's University. And before that, my undergraduate studies, I did my Bachelor of Technology in Naval Architecture and Ocean Engineering, that is shipbuilding, from the Indian Institute of Technology at Chennai. So, that's about me. This week is very special to me. It carries a lot of memories because it was in this week, in way back in the year 2000, that Bhagwan was very gracious to grant his first interview. That is the first interview that I had with Bhagwan. This took place in this week. There were many events that led up to it, and it's almost indelibly printed in my mind. I recall the evening of July 24th was when Bhagwan had indicated to me that come next morning with your mother and I will grant you an interview. And my prayer to Bhagwan at that time was that my mother, she was very unwell. She had rheumatoid arthritis. She was almost bedridden. And I had been praying to Bhagwan that he should cure her. I didn't want to see my mother in so much pain. So as a student, I went up to Bhagwan and I prayed to him that this is what I want the most. So Swami said, yes, you call her tomorrow for an interview and I will talk to her. I remember the whole night I could hardly sleep. Imagine that God tells you, you have an appointment with me tomorrow. Your mind will not rest. Many times Swami has spontaneously called for an interview and I used to prefer those rather than being told tomorrow morning Swami is going to talk to you. Because the amount of trepidation, you don't know what all could happen. It's like a huge range of possibilities. It is something you have prayed for literally your entire life. And so as you can imagine, I could hardly sleep that night. So next morning, I was sitting there we were seated in the veranda, very close to the interview room door. And Swami came out and he said, yes, you call your mother. So my mother, to give you a little bit of background, she had been coming to Bhagwan from maybe the 60s, 1960s, as a very young girl. She used to come for darshan over here. And she remembers at that time what used to happen was that if Swami called someone for an interview, the immediate family that is the other members of the family, people who have traveled with you, you know, this entire group could then, you know, get up and go for Bhagwan's interview. Swami just needed to tell like one person. She remembers, you know, very long back, my grandmother, she had come with somebody from her native place. So when that person was called for interview, the entire troop, whoever had traveled with that person, they all went into the interview room. And this is what had registered in her mind. So Swami said, call your mother. And I kind of knew the protocol. So I just got up, I looked towards my mother, and I just nodded. I said, Swami has called. And after that, my attention turned to Bhagwan. So I was just looking at him, he was talking to someone else. And again, you know, just to check if my mother has started walking towards the interview room, I turned, and to my horror, about 10 people were beginning to walk towards the interview room. So I saw my mother, my grandmother's sister-in-law, then her daughter, her two children, and then there was another friend of my grandmother and her two children. So it was a huge group that had started walking towards the interview room, and I was like showing my mother two, but she just wasn't looking. Swami had only said you and your mother. So I was trying to show her two people, but she was very triumphantly, she went and parked herself near the interview room door, and here I was, my heart started pattering. So then Swami, very sweetly, he comes up to me. He says, I called only two people, but I see your entire family has gathered there. Like, so I said, Swami, I am new and I don't know what has to be done. And right now they've just come, Swami. You only have to take care. So, you know, because I was new to Bhagwan, I could get away with that. But we also had that freedom. You know, we could speak to Swami like our own friend, like he was our family. Swami used to grant us that freedom. So I said, Swami, I can't do anything. It's beyond me. Now you take care. So Swami said, all right. And then he walked up to that group and he said, my interview room, it's very small. I cannot accommodate all of you. So please let only the mother come inside. He wasn't harsh at all. Very lovingly he spoke, and my aunt still remembers that. She says that just the way in which Swami spoke to us, very sweetly, I never felt the pain that I was losing out on an interview with Bhagwan. So she says, I just didn't feel bad about it. He spoke so sweetly, and that was how the situation was completely saved. And this interview for me was entirely a very remarkable conversation that I had with Bhagwan. In the sense that till then, what I had seen of Bhagwan or what I knew of Bhagwan was completely what the descriptions which other people had said. So this was a very big opportunity for me. I could see Bhagwan face to face as he interacted with people around him, as he would interact with me, my mother. I could, you know, it was for me a very exciting opportunity. Because lifelong, you heard the scriptures describe what God is. And they hold out God as someone who is omniscient, that He is omnipresent, that He is omnipotent. So that is, He is present everywhere. That He knows everything that is going on. And that He has got all the powers in His hand. He can do anything. And in that interview, Bhagwan, I could see these scriptures come alive, each one of them. That I could see that those ancient seers from across all over the world, their experience of God was genuine. They had seen, literally seen God. And here was Swami seated right in front of me. And without, very nonchalantly, without any need for admiration, approval, none of that. And Bhagwan was just being himself, which is to say he is being completely miraculous. I cannot go through all the events that happened because that is not the intention of the talk. But let me tell you briefly that if I had a thought in mind, maybe 5 years before, Swami knew it. He embarrassed me actually by speaking about a particular thought I had. He mentioned to my mother, and I got quizzed by my mother later for that. But I'll tell you one very specific instance. There was, in that interview room group, there was one person who was a security guard at Swami's residence. So this person, he had already had a previous interview with Bhagwan, and Swami had created for him a 3-diamond ring, you know, very much like this one. Swami had created a ring for him. So Swami asked for that ring back from this Gurkha. He asked the ring back. Then I was seated right in front of Bhagwan, almost at his feet. And Swami showed me the ring. And he said that this guard over here, he doesn't like this ring. He wants something else. And now you tell me, what should I change it to? Now imagine, like, so Swami, as at that time I admired the green emerald ring which Swami used to give devotees. Very beautiful ring. I said, Swami, I like that color. The green diamond ring is very nice. Swami said, okay, I'll change it into that. So he took out this ring and so he held it like this, so that I had a direct line of sight. I could see the ring. And Swami says, he blows once, poof, like this. And I watched and nothing had changed. Then the second time, I saw that it changed into a light green color. And then the third time Swami blew, it changed into the emerald green color, which is the ring which we normally see among many devotees. So Swami, then he showed it to me like this, and then he handed it back to that Gurkha. Now Gurkha, he had, his brother also was there in the interview. Now Swami had asked for his ring back. And Swami took it, he showed it to me. He said, now his ring, I will convert it into what is called as the Navagraha. So it was a ring of exactly this shape. And the Navagraha ring is a completely different shape. So it is square, and it is like a 3x3 array of different gemstones, all of different color. In fact, Kasturiji, he writes somewhere in, I think, the book Loving God. He says that this ring, it confers on the person to whom this ring has been granted. He is now completely free from the influence of the planets, of the 9 planets. So Swami said, I want to give this ring to this particular person. And I was again seated in front, and I handed Swami the ring. So Swami said, now watch. Okay. And he's speaking in Hindi to me. He said, ab dekho. So he blew 9 times. He would say, ek gaya. He would show it to me. Do gaya. Teen gaya. Right, and he blew 9 times, and every time he showed me, it was the same old ring. Nothing changed about the ring. He said, no gaya, and he showed it to me. Now, please remember, at that time I was 21 years old, not as mature probably as I am now. So when he showed me the ring, it was still the same ring. And I had the audacity to start to point out, Swami, it is, and I could not finish the sentence, because in front of me, in front of my eyes, at this distance, this a ring of this shape changed instantaneously into the Navagraha ring, right in front of my eyes. I am an engineer by profession. I love science. I still teach students mathematics. I have an abiding love for physics. And I cannot explain this. All my friends, I am from IIT Chennai, so my friends are practically all rationalists, and for the life of them, they cannot understand why I stay in Prashanti Nilayam. And when I tell them an incident like this, they only look at me like wondering what happened to this guy. And I cannot explain. I have no way of accounting. Is there the physics that can explain what happened right there? No, I don't know. They say, no, you were hypnotized. I said, do I look like that? No. there's nothing. Believe me, when this ring was created, Swami actually, his robe, the sleeve comes up to here. He pulled it up to here. He said, "Watch, now my hand is empty, and you can see there's nothing here." And we were protesting, "No, Swami, we have faith in you." He said, no, it's not for that. You just watch. See, nothing is there. See." And then very slowly he materialized. Almost 7 times, as I recall, his hand was circulating before this ring came. So I had a grandstand view of what Swami was capable of. I could literally see it coming, Swami holding on to this ring. So if anyone tells me, the media, many people, very cynical people, they tell me that, all this is magic. He had some way of doing it. And I just smile because I tell you I have seen it. You can't shake me. It's like the proof was right in front of my eyes. And I could not account for it. There is simply no way it could have been done any other fashion. Right? And what is more important is, see, Swami's attitude while doing it. Many people don't realize this when they write about Swami's miracles, that he is not trying to show off. He is not trying to prove to anybody that I am beyond space, I am beyond time. His every such conversation, it is motivated only by love. At that moment, what is present is love. Because sitting in the interview room, when he materializes something, we don't clap, we don't applaud. We just fold our hands and watch. Because we can see with our own eyes that what was Bhagwan's intent when he created that miracle, what we call a miracle. But for him, it is just a manifestation of his love. And that love concretizes in different ways. And in this fashion, he demonstrates, he gives us a glimpse of who he truly is. Otherwise, what we see is maybe a 5'3" figure clad in an orange robe, walking around, speaking to everyone just as we would, walking around just as we would, talking to people just as we would. And it is very easy to look at this human figure and say that he is a man just like us. It's very easy to fall into that trap. And so you have to be on the watch. Because at some point of time, God will, He will remove that veil, He'll part that veil, and He will show you who He truly is. And this is the moment that we all have to pray for. Because it will completely change your life. It will completely alter who you are as a person. Very rarely do these moments come. I recall one interaction with Bhagwan. This was when the school examinations were taking place. So I recall Swami would, every evening, he would come to some of the students and ask them, "What is the paper today?" They would say, "Swami, English." "Okay. And how did you write?" So they would say, "Swami, the paper was tough. We did our best." "So how much are you expecting?" So shamefacedly they would say, "Swami, 80. And Swami would make a face. He would say, "Your handwriting is bad. You'll get even less than that." So all these interactions. And I recall that, at some point of time I started puzzling. I said, why is this happening every day? Why does Swami need to ask which paper was today? And why does he need to ask those boys how much they're going to get? He might as well tell them, "You are going to get 70, 75. That's it. This is what you're going to get." And I remember when this train of thought started going very strongly for me, suddenly Swami just stood where he was. He didn't look at anybody. He said, "There are some people sitting here who are thinking, why does Swami need to ask all these questions?" And at that moment, I wanted to turn my face away from Bhagwan because I was definitely one of the culprits. And Swami said that, "Don't ever get fooled by what I do. You all do not know, you may not comprehend, but I am God." Very innocuous surroundings, some school children are sitting in front, they're writing their exams. At that moment, God chose to reveal himself. He said, "Do not be fooled by what I do and what I say. I am God at all times. I know everything that is going on." So, see, these are moments that Swami has given to all of us. I could literally conclude the talk here by saying that God walked among us. But is the intent, when we look at Swami, is the intent just to, was Swami's intent just to show how magnificent he was as a person, as a being? Did he come amongst us just to say, "Look, I am God and you're all human beings, remember that"? I think Swami went one step ahead, which is something perhaps only God can do. And Swami said, "Not only am I God, but you too are God." See, most of us are content, nothing, no harm in that, but most of us are content in sitting and worshipping Swami and, you know, speaking about his glory, singing his glory. Yes, naturally, that is a very right thing to do. Prayer to God has a lot of benefits. But we should also bear in mind what Swami said about each one of us. He said, "Each one of you is God. The only difference is that I know, but right now you don't." Or said more accurately, I think, right now we choose not to. See, this quest for who we are, it is not Bhagwan's quest. It's not a quest that happened like today or tomorrow. Way long back, it has been always there, I think, ever since mankind started thinking. It is written in the Old Testament of Moses. He is wandering around in the desert and suddenly he sees there's a bush, and it's not an ordinary bush. The bush is glowing with a strange blue light, and so he's intrigued, naturally intrigued. So he goes up to that bush and he realizes that what he's witnessing is a phenomenon, and he asks, "Who are you?" And that blue light, suddenly with a voice, it replies that, "I am that I am." It only says, "I am that I am." And of course, soon after that, a huge religion got built around that. And that blue light was given a name, Yahweh. Yahweh in Hebrew just translates to "I am." That's it. Nothing else. Because that being, that blue light, it didn't say, "I am God," or "I am so and so," or "I have come from some other planet." It didn't announce anything of that sort. All it said was, "I am that I am." And ever since then, we've been wondering what that statement meant. It is a quest. Can we answer it? Can anyone over here say, like, what that statement meant? "I am that I am." And believe me, the moment we answer the question, we lost the value of the question. There are some questions in this planet, in our existence, that have value because we keep pondering over that question, not because we answer it. The very our dwelling in that question, our pondering, our wondering what that question means, that has value more than actually answering the question. In Zen monasteries, they have this practice. One of the practices of training the monks in a Zen monastery is to pose a question. Like, for example, they could ask a question, what is the sound of one hand clapping? Now, this is the sound of two hands clapping. What is the sound of one hand clapping? These are called koans in Zen Buddhism. And the answer is definitely not something that we can relate to in this universe. And the Zen monks, they literally, they're frustrated just pondering over this. You and I would be, no? What is the sound of one hand clapping? And this question is always on their mind. What is that sound? What is that sound? What is that sound? And the moment they come with an answer, so one day they say, yes, I got the answer. They present themselves to the master and they tell the master, Master, I know what you meant when you said, this is the sound of one hand clapping. So master says, okay, tell me the answer. So they tell, from whatever understanding they have, they tell the answer. And the master, he picks up his stick and hits that monk. He says, you not got it. Go. Go meditate again. And any number of times, the monk comes back and says, I got the answer. Usually the reply is, take one stick and hit it. So, because dwelling in that question had more value, and whatever the answer is derived from your worldly experience, and therefore, by definition, it is not the truth, because the truth lies outside. As the Upanishads say, aprapya manasasaha, the mind, it tries to reach this, but comes back without words. It says, I'm not able to express what that is. So the person who tries to express is definitely a fool. He's deceiving you, he's deceiving me too.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Nityanand Swarupa Sai Gopala,
Nityanand Swarupa Sai Gopala,
Ishwaramba Nandana Sai Gopala,
Ishwaramba Nandana Sai Gopala,
Ishwaramba Nandana Sai Gopala,
Ishwaramba Nandana Sai Gopala.
Nityanand Swarupa Sai Gopala,
Nityanand Swarupa Sai Gopala,
Nityanand Swarupa Sai Gopala,
Nityanand Swarupa Sai Gopala,
Neela Megha Shyamala Rupa Gopala,
Neela Megha Shyamala Rupa Gopala,
Nityanand Swarupa Sai Gopala,
Nityanand Swarupa Sai Gopala,
Ishwaramba Nandana Sai Gopala,
Ishwaramba Nandana Sai Gopala,
Nityanand Swarupa Sai Gopala,
Nityanand Swarupa Sai Gopala,
Nityanand Swarupa Sai Gopala,
Nityanand Swarupa Sai Gopala.
Neel Megh Shyamala Rupa Gopala, Nityanand Swarupa Sai Gopala.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are now continuing with the talk by Brother Hari Shankar. This talk was delivered in the Satsang Hall here in Prashanti Nilayam on the 23rd of July, 2016. Stay tuned.
So there is a lot of value in this question called Who am I? Or what did that being mean when it said, I am that I am? So, if I am that I am, who am I? It sounds like a circular statement. No, I am that I am. So, gives me no access. So, finally, who are you in that case? If I am that I am, then what are you? That was the question. And as we ponder over it, we have various pointers, right? And in various systems of philosophy, Upanishads speak about it, the Far Eastern philosophies, Western philosophy. I recall this very nice question asked by a Greek philosopher. And the question is in the form of a puzzle. So it's called the Ship of Theseus. So in those days, all the ships were made of wood. So you would have planks of wood which are then fitted together, right? So this would form the ship. So they said there is a ship called the Ship of Theseus, and every year what they would do is one plank would be replaced. So you take out the original plank and you put another. Next year you remove this plank, keep putting another. So they said if now all the planks in the ship, let's say it took 500 planks, wooden planks to make that ship, having replaced all 500, is it still the Ship of Theseus or is it something different? Or said another way, what is the Ship of Theseus? Because when I take out all the wooden planks and it's now a completely new ship and you're still calling it the Ship of Theseus, what made it the Ship of Theseus? And the question, of course, was not confined merely to that ship. It is a question for all of us. If you look at the cells of your body, my skin cells will change every 150 days. So what makes me who I am if this body is continually changing? Swami used to ask, when you are a youngster, you have a particular kind of body. Then when you grow up, you have one kind of body. And the body is completely changed. The cells are all different. And then when you are aged, you have a different body. And finally you die. Now who are you? And Swami used to say the clue is when you are saying my body, right? You say my body. And so sweetly, Swami, his handkerchief would be here. Swami would pick it up and he'd say, see, you say my handkerchief, my robe, my dress. So he says, that means you are distinct from that. Just, it's there in your language already. You're already saying that I am distinct. Or you'd say, body. Why my body? My car. My tumbler. My body. And it's very wonderful if you actually wonder about it a little more. See, some of us may be aware of this. Living in your intestines, in your stomach, is a complete ecosystem. You're not even aware that it is there. You will be stunned at the number of beings that are there inside you right now. There are bacteria, and these bacteria fulfill a very important function. They're helping you in your digestion. You see, people who have digestive problems, they're asked to have more curd or more of what we call probiotics, because they're actually introducing bacteria into your stomach. There's a great lot of things that are happening inside the body you're absolutely not aware of, and then you go and say, it is my body. See, if it were your home, and if I were to tell you, in your kitchen there is a mouse. I am telling you, I am not living in your house. And I say, no, actually I know that in your kitchen there is a mouse over there. And how would that annoy you, right? You'd say, my house, there is a rat over there, I don't know. There's a whole lot of stuff we don't know about our own bodies. You know more about your house than you do about your own body. Otherwise, would you allow so many, like it's like you are one among many things that inhabits this body. You're sharing accommodation with a lot of people you don't know. And not only that, they're all participating. Like in this, if you are saying that it is my body and you're all staying and, you know, bacteria, you're staying there, but out of my, you know, benevolence. Doesn't work that way. Bacteria say, okay, I'll quit. Now you watch how you'll eat. Nothing will get digested. You can watch. Have fun. And that pizza you ate yesterday, and the burger you ate this morning, all of it is going to remain like that. Watch. So, this body too is not mine. I am like one of the inhabitants of this body, staying here. I don't know who my roommates are, and I don't want to know who they are, but they are there. So, as such, we can't even lay claim to our own body. There's a small problem there. Then, okay, fine, great. Let us leave aside the body. And many people have said, anyway, the body is a dirty thing. I don't want to claim it as my own. But I've got this very rich mind of my own. I'm so talented. I've got all these wonderful abilities, skills, talents, and wonderful thoughts, very deep thoughts. Right? And I am, so let's start with identifying that I am my feelings, that I am my thoughts. So, if that is what we are laying stake to and saying, no, that belongs to me, that is who I am, then the next question is, great, if you are the one who has thoughts, if the thoughts are you, then how about you try and stop having thoughts? Just try that. And Swami actually said this. He said in one discourse, he said that if you can be in this state of no thoughts, no mind, for Swami said very small, he says 12 seconds and you are enlightened. You are through. He says stay and look at how much he has lowered the bar. He says 12 seconds, give me that and you are through. In the very next statement, Swami would say, you know, all of you meditate here, sitting in Kulwant Hall, and nobody's thoughts are there on what is going on right in front of them. You might say, I'm doing japa. I am meditating on this name. And your thoughts are elsewhere. Suddenly, the maid says something. So you start thinking, oh, the maid has not cleaned the house properly. You hear a clang somewhere. Something fell down. Oh, wait. No, wait. That can. After the meditation, I will go and see. So they say, how about, like, if you are your thoughts and feelings, how about you stop them? I have zero control, actually, over what I'm thinking. I'd like to think that, yeah, these thoughts are mine, but to tell the truth about it, very rarely does it happen that I am actively thinking. Thoughts keep rushing in. So that person said this to me today, this morning, and while I had breakfast, and like, you know, this happened, the sambar was not good, and I should go tell the cook, I should give the feedback. But if I give the feedback, will that person take it the right way? This person the previous time when I spoke to him, and what happened? The thoughts? Wait. From where did they come? Did you have those thoughts, or these thoughts begin to have you? And yet again, you find yourself in a situation that what you claimed was your own is simply isn't. They are all having you. The body is having you. The mind is having you. And we still have not got at who you are at this moment. Isn't it wonderful or tragic? I don't know which. Because I was reading a book a few days ago, and it is called Incognito. It's by a neuroscientist and a behavioral scientist, David Eagleman. So the book, as I was reading, it went on very familiar lines. So he was talking about the different areas of the brain, how they function, and till he came to one section which truly horrified me. And this was about, he says that the brain is a democratic place. It's like a parliament. And I was wondering, what do you mean by a parliament? He says that there is not one personality that is living inside you. There are multiple personalities. Now that's a disorder. Right? He says that even the person you think you are is not like one person. So Swami, he brought it down to three. He pared it down to three. Swami would say that actually you are not one but three. He says there is the person you think you are, and then there is a person that others they think you are, and then there is finally the person you truly are. And then this neuroscientist, he says, maybe, you know, he was being nice to you, but there are so many. At all times, they're all fighting, you know, who am I? It's literally a fight going on in your brain. All the time. Whether you like to inquire about it or not, this is happening. Anyway, they're all fighting for supremacy. Right now, I am the person who is not respected. I need respect. That stands up. Another says that I am actually the leader of men. I am the leader of all men. No, I want to stand up. Next one says, I am a scared human being. Truly worried. I look at people around me, they scare me. And that says, how about I stand up? I would like to stand up. So there are numerous people all inhabiting the same space. The same mind space, and which you call you, strangely enough. All of them, according to you, are you. Now, why? It's a very serious inquiry, because a few days ago, we saw this, all of us are aware of what happened in France. There is what is called as Bastille Day, a national holiday in France. So there are so many people gathered over there to celebrate that, young kids, people of various denominations, various religions, and in such a beautiful place in France called Nice. And even as all of these people are celebrating, some maniac gets into a truck and he plows through these people. He takes his truck and runs over these people. The next day morning, there was this one very poignant picture. There is this a body, it is completely covered. The body is covered, but next to it is the doll that baby was holding. Which monster would do such a thing? Isn't it? Don't you think at this moment, when I speak about that person, he's a monster. 80 people mouth down, getting into a truck. And as if he was not content with mowing down, he had a gun in his hand and he's shooting people all around. I woke up this morning to another horrifying news that in Munich, Germany, it happened just a few hours ago. This person, he goes into a McDonald's restaurant over there. 18-year-old boy. I can't even call him a man. He's 18-year-old kid. And he takes this gun, just randomly starts shooting people all around. And nowadays, with people having mobiles, people are able to even record that incident live as it happens. And as watching the video of this incident just this morning, and there is even the translation of the conversation he was having with the people he was going to kill next, right? And they're all asking him, why are you doing this? What is wrong with you? And he says, 18-year-old boy, he says, all my life I have been humiliated by you people. And they say, what do you mean humiliated? And they start actually the conversations before that. I think all of them are very scared. They start, you know, calling him all kinds of names. And I began to wonder, you know, this 18-year-old boy, from where does he get that idea that he has been humiliated, that he is disgusted? I spent a lot of time wondering about that. So I started reading, you know, what happened. What happens to people like this? So that earlier aggressor in France, they went up to his friends, his family. They asked him, what kind of a person was he? Could you have predicted that he would have done this? See, that's the question, right? When you look at a person like a monster like that, were there any indications before? His family says no. His friends say no. He was a very quiet person, kept to himself, not even devout. And what tipped him over? All of a sudden he becomes this monster. This 18-year-old boy. See, he was in Iran, and from Iran his parents migrate to Germany, and they have like the kind of quality of life. It's a huge jump from Iran to Germany. The people are more caring, the life there is less stressful than it would have been in Iran, definitely more comfortable. And here is this 18-year-old boy who says, I have been humiliated my entire life. And the people around him could not have recognized him. They would never have been able to say that this boy was capable of such violence. Why does that happen? Because we should be aware that there are numerous people living within us. Something triggers, some outside environment, something happens, somebody says something, and that person stands up. And sometimes that person who stands up is a child. I recall when I was very young, maybe 4 years old. So we were in Delhi, and my mother, she said, go to the shop, buy some bread and come back. She gave me some money, maybe 10 rupees. And let's say the bread cost 8 rupees a loaf, right? So I go and I buy, and I come back with the loaf of bread. I hand it to my mom. My mother looked at me, she said, so where's the change? 2 rupees change, where is it? So I said, what? I didn't know the concept called change, money at 4 years old. So all I knew was I had to buy bread and give it to my mom. So I said, no change, I don't have change. She said, you're such a fool, you don't know. And this, naturally she was frustrated that, we were not very well to do. So she said, you should have known, you're such a fool, no, go get it again. And I felt such a sense of humiliation, right? At that moment, I felt such a sense of humiliation, and that remains with me to this day. And when I look back, almost everything, it's a pattern throughout my life. See, you come and tell me that you are richer than I am, it makes absolutely no difference to me. And somebody might come and say, you are a fat guy, I have a better body, I am leaner than you, I am fitter than you. I'm like, okay, I am fat, you have a better body, great, nice. Right? But the one thing that will trigger me is if you tell me I am more intelligent than you are. That moment, Hari Shankar will stand up. Till then, I am a very docile, human being. The moment you tell me in any little way, if you give me the slightest hint that you are in some way more intelligent than I am, I will stand up. Everything else, you're richer, okay, you're rich, good. You're fitter than I am, huh? You may be, yeah, good. I can sing, you can't. Right. I am more intelligent than you, aha. Wake up. That I'm going to contest. And practically, it has every decision that I've made in my life. If I look back, it is originating there. The need to be at the top of the class. If I don't get 100 in mathematics, that is it. Why did I choose mathematics? Because someone said those who are good in mathematics are the most intelligent people. Other subjects, accounts. Even now, if somebody says that I'm going to study psychology, the first thing that comes into my head was because you couldn't do well in maths. First thing. With due respect to anybody who took up psychology as a student, as a subject. First thing that comes to me. That's it. The brain's first thought is that. I am told that there was this person in Harvard. And everybody regarded him as, someone very, very special. He definitely was, because he had 3 PhDs in different subjects. One was mathematics, another was economics, and I don't remember the third. So somewhere, at some point of time, some seminar, it totally occurred to him that all his life, he was trying to prove to people that he was intelligent. And that was a cover-up for, trying to prove to people and to himself that he is not dumb. Entire life he spent only in trying to prove that he is not dumb. the family was doing whatever. He had no relationships to speak of. He had not gone on vacations. His weekends were full of studies and studies and studies. The moment he got that this was what his life was all about, that proving that he is not a dumb person, he says that he just sat back and kept laughing and laughing and laughing at himself. And that laughter was not a laughter of derision at himself, because at that moment he was truly free, completely free. The moment he could see that there is a strange person inhabiting his own body, his own mind space, that kept saying, I don't want people to know I'm dumb. So mathematics, then economics, and then some other subject, PhD, fully. See, I am, I should be content that I have a job, a secure job. Swami has given me a job. Even then, I keep enrolling into courses on Coursera. Online courses. All mathematics, and suddenly I see somewhere business skills. No, I want to go learn that. Why? I have no idea. No clue. All I want to prove is to myself, I am not dumb. In this way, there are so many, many voices fighting for supremacy. And, I told my story. I'm pretty sure now if I invite each one of you, take this seat and talk about something like that, you will see that each one of you have a story of your life that goes that way, right? Numerous voices, all different people inhabiting your own mind. One day you are the noblest human being. Very next day you are the nastiest of people. Suddenly. Every day you are going to Mandir and that Sevadal, he is being just as rough to you as he was every day. You are coming in, I am being very frank. Come in through that vehicle gate, try your luck. There is no bigger sadhana than that, right? You come in through that gate and look at how the Sevadal are going to interact with you. And I have seen myself. Some days I am very sweet. I come in and I say, no, my office is here only. And some days I am that, I just walk past, say what you want. I am not going to hear you. I just walk straight past you. And one day I decided to, ask the Sevadal there, how is it for you? They say, sir, this is the ultimate sadhana. When I come on Sevadal duty, sometimes I'm praying, no, not that spot. I did it last time. And then the leader says, you did that last time. No, you go there only. You are an expert. And they say that is the ultimate sadhana. You go there, that vehicle gate. Because people are going to enter and they're going to say, yes, this is our right. This was the gate Swami made for us. They're going to say sweetly, they'll say no, sometimes they'll be rough. And I am the same person, no? Every day I am walking through that gate. Some days it bothers me that they are saying, why are you coming through this gate? Some days it doesn't. Some days I am a very sweet person, unbelievably sweet. Next day I am nasty. What changed? Same person, same Harishankar. Body wahi hai, mind didn't change, no operation was done. What changed next day? So who gets to vote? If the mind is a parliament, now who gets to vote? Who gets to be the leader? And who decides that? That's a very strange question to ask, right? So, see this, Swami says one very practical thing in this case, that he says, tell me your company and I shall tell you what you are. He says, the kind of people you hang around with, you just give me that list and I'll tell you who you are. And Swami would remind us that satsang is the most important thing. Satsang means the company of noble people, like-minded and noble people who will foster, the noble qualities in you. Now send me to ISIS. Believe me, you'll see me in a few days gun-toting, completely ruthless, beheading people. I have no doubts about that. Because pretty soon I'll buy into that philosophy. It'll take me no time. People can be brainwashed any which way. It doesn't matter. So Swami used to say, like, maintain the company of good people. And I mention this time and again, because we get into that complacency. People ask, should we go to Prashanti Nilayam at all? Swami is there with us, at home. And I tell them, like, yeah, at home, fine, Swami is there, very good, he's there in your heart too, right? But just go around, go look at your surroundings. Are you surrounded by like-minded people? What do they talk about? The people around you, what do they talk about? Are they talking shop? Are they talking politics? If you talk to them about Swami, what do they tell you back? If you speak about the five human values, what do they tell you back in return? I had a couple of my school friends come here a few days ago. And they just couldn't believe, you know, they came here to Prashanti Nilayam. I took them for breakfast. At the end of breakfast, they were asking me, it is customary for us to have a smoke after breakfast. Where can we go? And I was like scratching my head. Like, I want to be a good host, but I don't know where in Prashanti Nilayam can you get a cigarette. So in desperation, I asked, haven't you brought your own? So I can get you matchboxes, but not a cigarette. I have no clue. Please don't ask. So these were bosom friends of mine, but like, what a gulf. Like, over years, we've not interacted with each other. Very close we were. But here I am in Prashanti Nilayam, and now I cannot even recognize those people. I can't be that way. It's pretty difficult. It's like, I know heart of hearts, we are, you know, like, very close to each other, but I cannot be in that company. It's impossible. So Swami says that he holds us each responsible, that we are responsible for who we are. See, you might say, I've got these numerous demonic thoughts and feelings, negative, positive, all sorts of things. Swami says, granted all that, but I have given you human beings, I have given you the power of discrimination. He says, Viveka. Because somebody asked Swami, they said, Swami, you say unity of thought, word and deed, and out there is a terrorist, and he is also being true to his thought, word and deed. He decided to kill a person and he killed that person. Thought, word and deed, all one. Great. So according to Swami, he should be the noblest person on earth. And Swami said, what I am holding him accountable for, this is recorded, Conversations Between Man and God, I think it's called. John Hyslop. Conversations with God. That's the title of the book, in which John Hyslop asked Swami, Swami, we find so many zealots who kill in the name of religion, are they being true to their word? Are they being noble? And Swami says that what they are failing to do, and this is God holding them accountable, he says what they are failing to do is using their discrimination. This is where you have to remember that you are the speaker of the house. You are the speaker. If there is a parliament, you are the speaker of that house. And I'm not using the word speaker in a loose fashion. So we have been given a very, very important tool. It's called language. Language. Language decides the context in which we live. See, many of you must be driving in traffic, right? So all of you, I'm very sure, at some point of time, either you've been driving or you've been back driving. I mean, sitting at the back and telling the driver what to do. Either way, you have a certain perception of the traffic, right? So, sitting there, different drivers in the same traffic all drive differently. Some are very daring drivers. They take their chances and they cut through very small gaps, right? Some are like me, very, very safe, right? Because for me, when I look at traffic, traffic is a scary thing. The same thing for my brother. He looks at traffic and he says, what a challenge, I can prove myself. Completely different, because his context is different. He looks at traffic and he says, wow. And I look at traffic and I say, scary. And where is scary and where is where are these appearing? Only in language. You see, when we go through difficult circumstances, we are the person saying it is difficult. Have you ever seen a dog saying, my life is sad? Or a cat ever say, you know, my life only, I keep running after mice all my life. Is this what life is all about? But human beings, we have language. And we use our language mainly to complain. Because language has the power to set the context of our life. What do I mean by context? And Swami says very beautifully, he gives this illustration that there are three sculptors and you're seeing each one of them doing the same thing, that they're sculpting an idol of the Devi. Right? So you go up to one sculptor, you ask, what are you doing? Right? So the sculptor says, you know, I've got this, I have to earn for my family. They told me that you have to, you know, sculpt this into an idol. A disgusting job. I need the money. You go to the next sculptor, and the sculptor says, you know, I want to prove myself. I want to prove that I am the best sculptor. And that is why I'm making sure that the eyes are nicely curved and all that. Right? Then you go to the third sculptor, and that sculptor says, and he's all bouncing with joy. He's the most joyous of them all. And he says, you know, hidden in that stone is God. And I'm trying to bring that God out. So that is the context. See, each person is doing exactly the same job, same tools, same money. But the person with aliveness, with vivaciousness in doing that job, is the person who thinks that there is God hidden in that stone. Is it the truth? Is that the truth? I don't know. I can't comment. But what I know is that the context which this person created for himself is what is giving him that much joy. It's all the same. Same idols, same tools, right? Context. And where is that context created? In our language. Because we said so. And somebody said, very powerful statement, he says, your life is going exactly the way you said it would, except that you forgot who said it. If you look at your own life, you'll see that it is true. Your life is going exactly the way you said it would, except that you forgot who said it. The circumstances are all the same. The Swami says, in this srishti, in this creation, nothing is wrong. And you can't change it. It's your drishti. And so Swami says that use your viveka. I've given you discrimination. Right or wrong. What will Swami do in this situation? So many tools he gives us. The scriptures are there. Read them. Find out. In the Shikshavali it says that go to a learned person and ask. If you are not clear what has to be done in this situation, go to a learned person and ask. But they all hold us responsible for the right action, for the right thought. In other words, voting on who is the person that needs to be out here at this moment. And all of us are faced with that situation. We all have responsibilities in our life, and there are things which we want to do. And presently, the world is going through a phase of individualism. It says, you know, I want to be this way, and this is how I will be. And I don't give a damn what all of you think about it. We want to be free, in other words. And a divine master, very beautifully he said this. He says, freedom is not the freedom to be what you want to be. True freedom is when you can be whatever it is appropriate to be in that situation. See, I could sit here and say anything I want. I can crack jokes the entire time. I can have all of you rolling on the floor. But is that appropriate at this moment? So I have to use my discrimination. I could sit here and show off all my oratorial skills. Not that I have it, but I could use that as a platform. So then how do we decide what what gives us this voting power? Just the realization that you are the speaker of this house. You get to decide. How? By speaking it. By creating the context. By creating the context of your own life. What is your life going to be all about? We have a youngster here. What is your life going to be about? You can, again, it's a question, and you can keep thinking about that. Right? What is your life going to be about? What is the context? You could create a context called, I am going to earn, you know, more money than anybody ever did. Or I am going to be the fastest athlete or the best video gamer there is on this planet. Or I could be the most intelligent person on this planet. I don't know what the context is. And all of it is, anything is valid. But you got to decide what your context is for your life. Because Swami is holding you accountable for that. He says, use your Viveka. And this is I would like to conclude with one very beautiful story which illustrates precisely this. There's this very young child, and he goes up to his grandfather and he says, grandfather, you know, there are times when I want to do the right thing and there are times when I want to do a bad thing. How come both of them are existing in me? So the grandfather says that within each person there is a white wolf and there is a black wolf. And both these wolves, at all the time, both of them are trying to see who is the victor, who wins. Both of them. So the white wolf is the wolf that leads us towards love, towards freedom, towards peace, compassion, towards service to others. And there's this black wolf which wants us to fight with others, cause violence, hatred, jealousy. So the grandchild, he looks at his grandfather and he asks, in this fight between the two wolves, which one wins? And these wolves are present in each one of us, right? And the being all the time, fighting for supremacy, right? So the grandson, he asks his grandfather, in the fight between these two wolves, who wins? Can you guess the answer? It's a very beautiful answer. The grandfather says, the one you feed. He says, the wolf that wins is the one you feed. And it's totally up to us. Who do I feed? Again and again and again. I can choose to be this small human being, full of petty feelings. Or I can say that Swami said, I am God, let me feed that. There is divinity in me, let me feed that divinity and grow. It's a choice. It's up to each one of us which wolf we would like to feed. It's, I think, according to me, one of the most important stories I've ever read. It just hit me, like, very strongly. It's my choice. Which one do I plan to feed? And I can feed it in various ways. I can choose the people whom I stay with, satsang. And I can see each one of you sitting here, you made the choice, right? You said, I could have been out shopping, I could be in my room and choose to rest. Beautiful weather. Any number of things, and then you decide, no, there is a talk and let's go and see, like, what we can pick up from there. I know there are people here who come and attend every talk every single day. I've seen them for years now. They are here every single day, among the many numerous choices that they can make. What are they feeding? There are people here I know who have been coming to Prashanthi Nilayam from ages. Swami is here, Swami is not there. They come here. What are they feeding? Which wolf are they feeding? Because as the Sufi philosopher Rumi, He reminds us, he says, you were born with wings. You are not meant for crawling, so don't. You are born with wings. Why do you crawl? You have wings, learn to use them and fly. Why do we choose to be small, petty human beings when we could be the giants that Swami held each one of us to be? When he says, you're all Divyatma Swarupa Laras, let us feed that divinity. Let us feed that divinity. I don't know of anything else that would make Swami happy. We could sing his praises, yes, he'll be happy, you're thinking of me. We could definitely go and serve human beings, because that is what Swami has commanded us to do. But what choice we make, if we could live by his words, when he says, you are divine, I think that would make him the happiest person. And that would make us happy, because he is the dearest one for each one of us. If I am here, if you are here. See, when I was young, I was an irascible person. A person who has met me when I was a child, school going, college going, they would be surprised, huh, this guy in an ashram. Sathya Sai Baba's ashram, oh my God, impossible. Nahi ho sakta hai. If each one of us, he's gathered us here, nothing but his compassion. I'm sure many of you were very stable-minded people, all, you got it all together, virtuous, the apples of your mother's eye, I wasn't. I still cannot account why Swami brought me here. I have no idea. But I am forever grateful for that, because I come here and if you think that for you satsang is important, for me it is. Like when I come here, when I am asked to speak, normally I am thinking about my work or I am thinking of some, you know, academics thing. Something is always going around in my mind. But the moment I am told, you got to go and speak to devotees, I am a totally different human being right then. Absolutely different. It makes, you know, the days before, the days after, I am unrecognizable. And believe me, this is the contribution that each one of you makes. And right now, you've been patiently listening to all that has been said. There's a canteen below, you have ignored the calls. Right? And you've been patiently listening. And that gives me enormous value to be in a satsang like this. Because I know it is a privilege to be among each one of you. And I thank you for that gift. And I thank Bhagwan for that gift. Sai Ram.
ईश्वराम्बनन्दन साई जनार्दन
ईश्वराम्बनन्दन साई जनार्दन
ईश्वराम्बनन्दन साई जनार्दन
परति
पुरीश्वर साई गुरु देवा
परति पुरीश्वर साई गुरु देवा
परति पुरीश्वर साई गुरु देवा
परति पुरीश्वर
साई गुरु देवा साई गुरु देवा
साई गुरु
Sai Guru Deva, Sai Guru Deva,
Sai Guru Deva, Sai Guru Deva.
ಮಂಗಳದಾಯಕ ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ ಮಂಗಳದಾಯಕ ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ ಮುನಿ ಜನ ಮೋಹನ ಮಾಧವ ಸಾಯಿ
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 ಪ್ರಶಾಂತಿ ನಿಲಯ ದೇವಾ ಪ್ರಶಾಂತಿ ನಿಲಯ ದೇವಾ
ಪ್ರಶಾಂತಿ ನಿಲಯ
ಭರತಿ ಪುರೀಶ್ವರ ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ
ಭರತಿ ಪುರೀಶ್ವರ ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ
ಭರತಿ ಪುರೀಶ್ವರ ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ
ಭರತಿ ಪುರೀಶ್ವರ ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ
ಈಶ್ವರಾಂಬನಂದನ ಸಾಯಿ ಜನಾರ್ದನ
ಈಶ್ವರಾಂಬನಂದನ ಸಾಯಿ ಜನಾರ್ದನ
ಭರತಿ ಪುರೀಶ್ವರ ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ
ಭರತಿ ಪುರೀಶ್ವರ
ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ
ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ
ಮಂಗಳದಾಯಕ ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ
ಮಂಗಳದಾಯಕ ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ
ಮುನಿ ಜನ ಮೋಹನ ಮಾಧವ ಸಾಯಿ
ಮುನಿ ಜನ
ಪ್ರಶಾಂತಿ ನಿಲಯ ದೇವಾ
ಪ್ರಶಾಂತಿ ನಿಲಯ ದೇವಾ
ಭರತಿ ಪುರೀಶ್ವರ ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ
ಭರತಿ ಪುರೀಶ್ವರ ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ
ಭರತಿ ಪುರೀಶ್ವರ ಸಾಯಿ ಗುರುದೇವಾ
ಭರತಿ ಪುರೀಶ್ವರ